This is the Next Bite of Life podcast, the place to be to hear personal stories from expats, digital nomads, and everybody else taking their next bite of life. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Next Bite of Life podcast and videocast. My name is Kem Kem. My guest today is Anthony Copeland Parker. And he is an author and a loving husband. And we're going to find out all about him and why this is such a special show for you to listen to, because one of the things that really matters most for as we age is obviously health. I mean, that's the number one reason. If there's no health, you're pretty much screwed and everything else. So we're going to talk about him and his life with his wife. So say hello to everyone.
Hello, how are you doing today? I'm glad to be here. And you can call me Tony.
Oh, great. Oh, good. Because I was like, three names was a lot for me to handle. So Tony, thank you so much for being here. You know, I have been dying to talk to you since I got in touch with you. And the first thing I want to mention is you have been traveling all over the world, running marathons. Now, can you tell us why, how this came about?
In 2014, I needed to have open heart surgery to replace a leaky aortic valve. Also, right around the same time, my partner, Catherine, was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's.
Oh, wow.
We decided that with our passion for running, we were both endurance athletes at the time, running marathons and half marathons, and also the fact that we love to travel, we decided to combine the two. So what we did was we retired, sold our home, and became nomads running races all over the world. That was not our initial plan. We were basically going to try to find someplace else to live. We were in Louisville, Kentucky at the time. But another race came up, another destination came up, and we just kept moving from place to place, probably about every 3 to 4 days. And
oh, wow.
We've been doing that for the last 7 years.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I just assumed it was like a one, you know, maybe a two off thing, if not one off, but like a year or something. But I didn't realize you'd been doing it for so long. Now, before we get into the actual part of that, take me back a few years before that. Where were you living? How did you guys meet? I mean, I love a good story. Everybody loves a good love story. So tell us, you know, how it all happened.
Well, this one was pretty interesting. So Catherine was running marathons, and she had a goal to run a marathon in all 50 states. We were at a small race, a 5K, and I overheard her telling others about this story. I had never run a marathon. This was back in 2000. And I started listening more and more, and also started asking her more and more questions about marathoning. And I convinced her to train me to run my first marathon in 2000 at the New York City Marathon. I actually grew up in New York, so that had always been a part of something I wanted to do. And she trained me to run that one marathon. Me thinking that would be my only marathon, I would be done, I could check it off my box.
Exactly.
But right now, she's done 83 marathons.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, and I've completed 68 also.
Oh my God. Where do you get the energy?
Well, we try to find the energy from ourselves, you know.
Wow.
Taking it off of each other.
I mean, that's amazing that your very first one, your dip into marathoning was a 26.2, right? Mile race. Isn't that amazing? I mean, how long did it take for her to train you to do that?
Well, this was in April, and we did the marathon in November. And we
did a number of, a matter of months.
Yeah, we did a number of races along the way to get ready for it. But yes, it was. And so when we got finished, I thought, okay, I got my marathon done. And then she turned around and says, well, we're going to do another one in 2 months in New Orleans.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. And every one after that has been, you know, another one, another one, another one. So that's
Oh my God. So when you went, you know, after New York, when you went to the next one, did you say, okay, now the second one is done and dusted and that's it? But she kept urging you on.
Yeah, and at she that kept point, urging me on. Right.
At that point, you were also willing to right. run. So you had gotten yes. it in your bloodstream at that point. It was like,
absolutely. Now, well, it fit with my style of life. It was just the fact that you're challenging yourself. You're up against the wall, actually around mile 19 and 20, you're like, okay, I can't do this anymore. You have to really find the strength from within to get it done. So I really enjoyed that part of it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, when you ran, and you ran for several years, when did it come to the point? I mean, you said you needed a heart surgery, right?
Right.
When did you get to the point where awesome. You were going and everything was going fine? You were running out of those marathons. When did you start to notice that your health was deteriorating or that hers was also deteriorating? How long was that gap in between?
Well, it was 2012. I was a commercial pilot and every 6 months I would get a physical. And my doctor noticed a heart murmur. A lot of times heart murmurs can be benign, but this one was the fact that my aortic valve wasn't closing mm-hmm. properly, and he could hear the regurgitation of the blood. So we monitored it for 2 years. So now we're into 2013, and then I started to notice a problem with Catherine, her memory, things that she would, have problems doing that she normally did. And then in 2014, I decided to go ahead and have the surgery and replace the valve. And then also when she was starting to have problems with her occupation, her boss started having problems with her performance. And then we went to a neurologist to see what the problem was. And then that's when the diagnosis came up. Mm-hmm. So 2014 is when everything kind of rolled together.
Yeah. Now, go ahead, please.
Yeah, it rolled together, and we decided to make a little bit of a life choice for us. I did not want to continue to go to work, leave her at home to fend for herself. Mm-hmm. So I decided to retire. She was able to get severance from her job and put on disability from her job, and then we had some races on the schedule. We said, we'll go race here and we'll see what the place is like and maybe we'll stay. And then next thing you know, years go by and now we're in San Diego, California. We were in LA before that. We were in Portland, Oregon before that doing the race, a half marathon. So, and we have another race coming up here in New Mexico in a few days. So that's how we roll.
That's amazing. Now, when you were having the doctor monitor your heart, you were still racing? Weren't you concerned that maybe there might be problems?
Yes, I was concerned. And I monitored myself and I was always making sure that, it was doing everything my doctor said I needed to do. It was one of those situations where you have to start facing life a little bit differently. Yes, the valve could one day not close at all, and that would be the end of it. But that could be me sleeping. That could be me walking. That could be me eating. Could be me running a race. So nobody told me that it would be any more injurious for me to run or not to run. The way I looked at it was I was going to try to be in the best possible physical shape that I could be in time for the surgery so that I could recover. As a matter of fact, I ran another marathon 3 months after the surgery.
Wow. Now, was it tough to take care of yourself and also take care of Catherine when this was happening? I mean, how did you cope? Because that's a lot.
Well, I was, like I said, I was a pilot for 37 years and I was also a manager. So managing situations and coping with situations in the air is something I was used to doing. So I just kind of treated it like that and stayed focused on what the goal was and opposed to obsessing on what our problems were.
That's great. Now, for people who don't know what the symptoms or what to look for in early onset Alzheimer's, what can you tell us? Like you said, you were starting to notice some things. Like, what are some of the things that you noticed that was so different that you said, okay, maybe we need to have this checked out?
That was a good question. I really appreciate that because it is something that the loved one can notice and can have the test done and then start some type of treatment early on. For me, it was mostly her repeating things that, you know, she had said earlier, telling a story over, and also not remembering things that I would mention. So like, you know, tomorrow we're going to go do X, and then later on, what we're going to do tomorrow, things of that nature. One thing that I did notice that really, you know, told me there was something wrong, which was the fact that she was having problems balancing her checkbook. Mm-hmm. And that's just a simple task that people do. They actually probably don't do it that much
anymore. Not anymore, right? Cell phone.
Yeah. But back in the day, you would sit down with your register and you would make sure that you, you know, checked off all of the checks that you had written. And she was just having a hard, really hard time with that. And then job performance-wise, she got a new boss. And the new boss wanted things done his particular way. Whereas with people early on in Alzheimer's, they use routine to kind of fool people into thinking everything's okay. They use sticky notes, they use reminders, you know, they use their phone to kind of help them along the way. So those are the things that you could be looking for.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, because, you know, a lot of people also, I mean, and it's terrible, but you hear people, they disappear. As soon as something like that happens, it's like, okay, see ya, I'm off to someplace else. And it's admirable that you were saying, okay, we're going to meet this head on and we're going to do it together. And that's wonderful. And it's a good example for people. Now, when you decided, okay, we're going to tackle this, did you both come up with the idea of saying we're going to sell everything? You said you were thinking of retiring, you know, so you went ahead and retired early. Were you terrified? Because, you know, I did the early retirement thing and I was just like, you know, to the last second, you're just like, oh my God, did I make the right decision? I'm sure you must have had this kind of thoughts. And then both of you at the same time, that must have been really extra.
Right. So as a pilot, we're trained to handle the situation and forget about what happened, you know, 5 minutes ago, because in 5 minutes, that was several miles have traveled. Yeah. So I just kind of looked at it from that aspect of this is the best thing for us to do. Doing research into the disease, I came up with a couple of things that I found that was, they talk about that is helpful for the brain. One is exercise. So I was like, okay, you know, we do a lot of exercise, so we want to make sure we keep that going. Mm-hmm. And then having the races on a schedule keeps you motivated, you know, have a goal that you want to do, you want to set for yourself. Socialization is also good. So what we did was we did a number as we were going to these different cities, we would go to countries, we would do some tours. So that would force us into a socialization, you know, because the loved one has a tendency to want to withdraw as time goes on. So, you know, having that socialization is really good. Seeing new and exciting things. At first, your short-term memory is affected. Your long-term memory is good. And also things that are very memorable go into long-term memory. So you might get frustrated with the day-to-day, but then you have this, those situations that you can look back upon and say, oh yeah, we were just, you know, seeing the Eiffel Tower, or we just climbed the China Wall, or whatever the situation might be, to kind of give you the satisfaction that you need. They also say sleep is very important for folks with Alzheimer's. So by exercising a lot and getting, you know, the proper nutrition, then you can get the 8 to 9 hours of sleep that's necessary for folks with Alzheimer's. So we combined all those things and into our lifestyle and then made it very beneficial for her over the years.
Now, did the, I know, you know, so she started a drug regimen. Did you have problems? Like when you go to other countries, for instance, how do you handle her drug regimen or her doctor's visits? Do you time that to go back to the US or do you just see a doctor on the fly?
No, we did. We scheduled around the doctor visits. We actually entered into a clinical trial for a drug. It ended up failing, but unfortunately, we saw some improvement, but it did not meet the requirements that they had set for themselves, and then the drug trial failed. Mm-hmm. But yes, we would, you know, look at our schedule, you know, look at their schedule, make some adjustments, and all. I actually don't know what we're going to be doing more than about 2 months from now. I have some ideas, and, you know, depending on situations, we make adjustments. We just actually came back from Berlin and Scotland here last month.
Nice.
We were able to do some races there, so that was really good.
Wow. Now, I know, you know, running races all over must be expensive. How do you budget for where you're going to and the race? Like, how long do you stay? Let's say you were in Berlin, for instance. How long did you stay for the race after that?
We use a tour company that's based in Boston called Marathon Tours and Travel for a number of our trips. And what they do is they sign you up for the race. They take care of the accommodations, they all the tours that are involved, and then you have dinners with them and things of this nature, receptions and things like that. So it's all included into.
Oh, that's good. So that makes you have an idea. That's fantastic. Now, when you ran the races, like, where would you say, oh my God, this is the best race, I could actually live here also? Did you ever consider that? Like, just chucking everything and just settling in, you know, in one of those places that you ran a great race, for instance?
We have a couple of favorite places. One that stands out, we just went through there just for a stopover on our way back from Inverness, Scotland, back to the United States, and that's Amsterdam, Netherlands. And we really love, there. And we can see ourselves living there. Right now, it's kind of hard because, you know, the borders are, they're open, but you have to test to get in and, you know, things of that nature. But, you know, we can see ourselves maybe a few years when things start opening back up. But they had we did a half marathon there. It was a fantastic race. The people were always so friendly.
Yeah, great city. Now, so that was the one that you would say, I could actually live here and move here and everything would be fine. When lockdown happened, were you back in the US, or were you, you know, did you happen to be someplace that was like far away and it was hard to get back?
That's a great question, because yes, it was a very interesting story about that. We were on a cruise in the Caribbean, and we finished up in St. Martin, and we flew over to St. Kitts, and we were in St. Kitts in March, and COVID hit, and St. Kitts was, they were not joking around. They took it very seriously. They closed their borders, and they had lockdowns for 3-4 days at a time.
Wow.
And we were stuck there for a month.
Oh,
now people say to us, oh, you're stuck in St. Kitts, that must be pretty nice. But as a foreigner, you know, you're on the outskirts of who's going to be taken care of and things of that nature. So it was not very, you know, nice for us.
Oh my goodness.
And not knowing when a plane's going to arrive and, you know, be able to get off the island. So turns out about 20 of us chartered an airplane.
Wow.
We were able to fly out after a month, and we ended up back in San Juan, which was pretty much empty. And then we flew on to Atlanta. We went, made our way back to where Catherine's family is in Louisville, which was funny and not so funny, because we thought, okay, we'll be back with our family. But they were so paranoid, and they were like, oh, you just can't
be
St. Kitts. You can't be anywhere near us, right? Yeah. You know, we had to wait a whole another month before we could even see them. It was unreal.
Yeah.
So we actually only took the month of May off, and then we were back on the road.
Wow.
We figured we're staying in hotels or Airbnbs. It doesn't matter whether we're here or there. And
that's true.
Being a pilot, I had no problems getting back in an airplane.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's, you know, wearing masks and the filtration systems in airplanes are really good. So we were back on the road. The rates were really cheap. They were giving away hotels and cars. And
how were the races? Were you the only two that showed up?
It's like... Yeah, we did have some races where it was like five of us or 10 of us in some little city that, you know, would allow people to, you know, run around their lake or whatever. So,
Wow. That must have been something. I had a friend in London that I interviewed, and he was saying, you know, he was getting ready and doing this dumbbell things. And, you know, and then, of course, you know, lockdown happened, and he's like, you know, he was the only person who showed up because everybody's so scared. But, you know, we didn't know anything at that point. Right. So, wow, that must have been, it must have been a relief to get back, at least say, okay.
Yes, it was. You know?
Right. But then you were ready to go.
It taught me a lot about islands. And, you know, how they look at it. Yep, we can easily close our borders.
Yeah, just exactly.
When airplanes land or any cruise ships in, and everything's fine. You
know? Wow, that must have been terrifying, at least for the first couple of weeks, because nobody knew how long it was going to last. I thought, okay, yeah, we'll stay a couple more weeks where we were. And then it's like, oh my God, my friends are like still stuck in Australia now. So
there's
so many people who, you know, they had to rent a place there, they have a place here. So, you know, now you've written a book, a memoir about your life and cats. Now tell us about the book and how that came about.
Well, going back to St. Kitts, we were in St. Kitts, and I had been writing to a blog. The blog is Running With Cat, C-A-T. That's my pet name for Catherine.com, runningwithcat.com. And I, during that lockdown period, I compiled all my postings under the blog and decided I was going to go ahead and write a book. So I took that month to edit, you know,
chop
it down.
Yeah, no place to go, right?
You know, place to go and go through it. And then after that, I found a professional editor. And then after that, I found a publisher. But yes, the name of the book is Running All Over the World, Our Race Against Early Onset Alzheimer's. And that's a picture of us in St. Martin, running along the beach in St. Martin. It's a travelogue. It's a offbeat love story. It's a memoir. It's a medical memoir also because of her condition, also my condition. And then also the aches and pains all runners have over the years.
I can imagine.
I talk about that situation and you know, how we managed to set goals for ourselves. Catherine, during the 5.5 years of this book, she was able to get all 50 states done as marathons.
Nice.
And right now we're going back through the states and working on getting a half marathon in all 50 states. Next week we'll be in New Mexico and we'll get state number 41 there.
Wow, so that's amazing. I mean, have you found that it's been really therapeutic for her to do this, and you know, it keeps her focused and it actually helps with memory?
Yes, it does. It does. It really does. They say that there's some things that take place during intensive exercise. Inflammation is reduced. That's one of the problems with Alzheimer's. And then also it helps to remove some of the plaque that builds up in the brain during the course of the day. So they talk about toxins. So as you're exercising, you're sweating out the toxins. You're getting a lot of oxygen flow in for the brain. So that's also very helpful. And then of course it wears you out. So when it comes time for bed, you're ready to get some good,
which
good
rest.
Nice sleep.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I mean, it's very inspirational because a lot of people, once they get a diagnosis, your first, you know, when you go through all the stages of whatever, your first thought after that is to just kind of give up. And well, you're just hitting it head on, like, you know, we're going to give you a very tough fight, which is amazing. I mean, she's lucky in that you had the background that you do, where it's all like, da, 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 this is it. there's no use looking back. You just want to hit the problem and go head on with it. And it's amazing. So you were obviously meant to meet each other because there's a purpose to it. And it's fantastic.
That's a good point. Yes, we also use travel as medicine for us. Nice. You know, I've always traveled. She enjoys traveling. She traveled as a youth. So the going from place to place and seeing new people, seeing how they go about their same things that we're trying to do,
exactly.
You know, make a living and, you know, enjoy life. And,
yeah.
But they do it a little bit differently in different countries and in different cities. So it's always good to see. The other thing is that we've made so many friends over the different trips we've been on. So for example, we were in LA and we have a friend there, and we have some people that we met on another trip when we were there. My son lives in San Diego, so we'll see him. We have some folks that we'll see when we were in Portland, Oregon, and running a race there. So we can drop in just about anywhere, and there's somebody within about an hour's drive we can have lunch or dinner with and visit with. So that helps out a whole lot.
Oh, that's great. I think that's so admirable what you're doing. Now, do you ever have, well, you said, you know, you have like 2 months out, you're going to, you have plans for the next 2 months, and then you're not sure afterwards. Is it going to involve more marathons? Obviously, right? Right. And then.
Yeah, there's always a race somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's how we decide what we're going to do and where we're going to be.
Okay.
Pick the race first. And then we start putting the things together and deciding, you know, where we're going to go. For example, we could be on a cruise somewhere and cruising the Caribbean, and then we'll say, oh, yeah, but it was a race, you know,
race
3 weeks from now in on this island. So we'll make sure that the cruise stops somewhere nearby, and we get off, and then we visit, you know, a couple of countries, and then, you know, then we do the race, and then we come on back to the States.
That's amazing. I cruise and I'm like, okay, where's the food? And you cruise,
right,
you're like, where's the race?
And even if there isn't a race, what we do is we'll get off the ship and we'll say, oh, I think we'll go left this time.
Wow.
And then we'll just start running to the left or to the right off the ship. So
isn't that great? That's what travel, you know, does to a lot of people in this amazing place that you didn't even know existed. So that's fantastic. Now, I'm going to leave you with a couple of questions, I guess, or one question at least. What would be your advice for somebody who may be going through the same trial and tribulation? You know, what would your advice be for somebody going through this who, you know, what can they do? What would you say to them? Tony A.
Well, I've been asked that question, and I do have very strong feelings about that answer.
Oh.
My opinion is that you don't do what many people tell you to do, which is to do the routine. Folks say, oh, you need to have a routine. You need to be doing the same thing every day and know exactly where the bathroom is and exactly where you're going and do the same thing every day. I look at exercising your brain. Now, on the one side, they say, oh, you should try to do puzzles, crossword puzzles, Sudoku, things of this nature to keep exercising your brain. Well, I think travel is a great way to exercise your brain.
For sure.
You're trying to figure out how to work through the maze of the airport.
In a different language.
Hotels, the different languages, the different people in different situations when we, you know, drop into a different city. So from that aspect, that's one of the things that is kind of counterintuitive, but I feel very strongly about. The other thing is, I believe that you should take this as a team effort. A lot of times what happens is in your time of year, you know, for Catherine was in her mid 50s, I was in my late 50s. So you need to really start planning for retirement to be around the 60s so that you'll have the funds available if something like this should happen, as opposed to saying, well, there's, you know, retirement will come and maybe I'll retire, because something like this happens. You know, I think as a team effort, we need to both be handling and tackling it together. And then the last thing is to find something that you're both passionate about and that you enjoy doing together. And that's a big difference here, is the fact that we both enjoy and have a passion for running and also enjoy traveling. So we're able to do those two things together. We're always together, and we can always enjoy all aspects of the situation, as opposed to just having to adjust to the disease. We're enjoying life and having a good quality of life, no matter how long it might be.
Well, you can't ask for more than that. I mean, you are just a great example for everybody. It tells you, you don't have to quit. You don't have to have the disease dictate what your life is going to be. You can actually take control and have a good quality of life. Like you said, you can travel, you can find that passion of yours. And this is one of the reasons why, like for me, what you mentioned is what I live by. Travel. Well, I add food instead of your marathon.
That's a good, great example.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, so, you know, it's like what my husband and I share a passion for. So we always enjoy that. And I think, yeah, this is something that we would do all the time. But I also like the part that you said about, you know, you never stop trying to at least plan for the future, because really, when stuff like this hits, you have to be in a financially stable situation. You can't wait till the last, when you start getting older, it's very important to start taking care of not just your health, but your finances as well. Right. And absolutely. So you can, it makes life a whole lot easier. And this decisions are not so bad. So I'm so glad you mentioned both, because really it's a combination. Otherwise you're totally screwed. So yeah. Thank you so much, Tony. This has been great. So once again, please tell us again what the book is, where they can get it if they're interested. And
I'll be more than happy to. You can follow us at runningwithcat.com. What I do is do a 30-day trip, and then I write it. You can, you know, our travels and our adventures. And then the book, Running All Over the World, Our Race Against Early Onset Alzheimer's, is everywhere. You can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's iTunes. I had a gentleman narrate an audiobook for it. So it's in hardcover, soft cover. You can get it in ebook form and also an audiobook. The gentleman that did the audiobook did a really good job. And just as a side note, that was one of the things I wanted to do, was to have somebody tell us the story. We were driving in from LA and listening to it in the car, and Catherine's is laughing and giggling at the what he had to say about what we, some of the crazy stuff that we did along the way. I highly recommend it. And then if you want, you can go to runningwithcat.com, and you could also buy a autographed copy of the book there.
Oh, that's great.
I'll send it off. When I go through Atlanta, I'll get the orders in and I'll autograph and send it on out. For you, I have something for you and your listeners. For you, I'm going to send you a audiobook download. And then for the first listener that goes to the connect page on runningwithcat.com, I'll also just mention that you heard it here, and I'll send them an audiobook.
Oh, that's great. Now, you know that reading and listening also stimulates the brain. So if you're listening, and you should get in on this, you know, when the memory starts to go for everybody, it's always nice to have a little bit of stimulation. So this is a great way to do it. And I thank you for doing that. That's awesome. So, you know,
you're quite welcome.
Thank you so much, everyone. You know, once again, you'll find the blog post on nextbiteoflife.com. A synopsis of what we talked about. And you'll also, of course, have the video on YouTube if that's what you prefer to hear. And you can listen to the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, and all the millions, you know, that follow it. So everyone, thank you again for being on the podcast, Tony. I really appreciate it. I wish you many more races, many happy, healthy, wonderful, you know, ongoing love life with Kat. Thanks again.
Thank you. You're quite welcome. We're all ready to go out to Mission Beach and go for a run. So you have a great day.
That's fantastic. Enjoy.
Okay, sounds good. Talk to you later.
Bye.